Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I know we talk about this a lot on the podcast, but have you ever stopped to think about your money thoughts and the special powers that they have? And that might seem really airy-fairy and kind of counterintuitive to traditional personal finance advice, right? Like you do this and you get this outcome, you save more money and then you can achieve your goals. And, you know, all of those items that we're so used to reading about, listening to podcasts about, whether you go hear someone talk about money, whatever it is, it's never really focused around the power, the special powers, those like kick-ass superhero powers that your money thoughts have and how that impacts your bottom line, your wallet, your bank account, whatever it is for you. I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money. And today we're talking your money thoughts and their special powers with Michelle from The Holistic Wallet.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
So today's episode and Ask Shauna question, they all kind of like jive together like a really good hot fudge sundae. If you didn't know this about me, I have like a serious thing for dessert. It's bad. It's actually bad. It's not an addiction. We're not quite on that level yet, but I'm going to tell you, I've been eating super clean the last month, actually, the month before my birthday, and I do miss sweets. I do miss eating. I think my favorite sweet, if I had to name one, is probably a hot fudge sundae. I love cake. I mean, who doesn't love a good brownie, a chocolate chip cookie any day, like that's warm and hot and the chocolate is like oozing out of it? I mean, that is sensational. I could go on and on about desserts, but you're not here to listen to me talk about desserts. Maybe you are. Maybe we should just do a whole podcast about desserts. That would be really fantastic. But The point is that today's money question and the topic of this episode, they really flow together. And I thought this was, you know, we talk about this topic a lot, but I feel like this is a little bit different angle. And it's so good to hear this message over and over and over again. I know personally, myself, I like to hear this message. I like to tell myself this message over and over again, because it really helps me be reassured that being smart with your money, it's not just about these strategies, these tools, these steps. It's really about the whole package. And it's really about you at the end of the day and what you want your life to look like. So the question that came in today was from Kyle. And Kyle says, love the podcast. My girlfriend and I listen to the episodes together so we can talk about them after. Yes, we're self-professed money nerds, but where else are we going to learn about this stuff? I have a sort of strange question for you. We got some patterns with our finances that we'd like to change that aren't particularly good. One of them is the amount of money we spend on eating out, and we're actually not happy with it, but we've tried a bunch of different things and nothing seems to work. I'm beginning to think that we need to focus on why we were going out to eat so much and not just on harping on how expensive it is. Can you help us think about this and maybe how we can get a new habit to stick? Because we'd really like to save more money. It's not that we don't want to eat out. We'd love to eat out. We find it's a great bonding experience. But we know that it's definitely not pushing us forward. So this is a great question, Kyle, and I'm so happy you asked it. And it's certainly not a strange question. In fact, I love strange questions. The stranger, the better. They're more fun, I think, because we can hear a different perspective and kind of hear what other people are thinking. And I don't know about you, but that just makes me feel more comfy when I have thoughts like this, like, oh, somebody else is thinking this too. But I think you kind of hit like the nail on the head. It's starting with the why before you get to the how do you actually change the habit, because the why is the understanding, the awareness of what is going on with your finances. You know, whether it's a new habit you want to set or a goal you're trying to achieve, understanding why you're doing it or, you know, what the motivation is behind it, it helps you, I think, attach to something inside of yourself, something psychological, something that is that place where habits really start to form, you know, and hopefully here we're trying to form a good habit so that you can make a change and the change will actually stick. I think, you know, a couple of things to think about, whether it's going out to eat or you can never save money or you've been trying to achieve this goal forever and it's just not working, is thinking about, you know, what are the limitations that cause you to do whatever money habit you're stuck in? Is it you got kids? Is it you've got a really tough work schedule? Is you're just like constantly stressed out? Like, what is it that is happening to you in your life that is facilitating that negative money habit or that thing that you want to change that you just can't figure out how to do? And I think it's really about, I mean, the things that have worked for me and that I've worked with other people that I have worked with is thinking about how you can set yourself up for success. You know, if we're talking about eating out, it's how can you set yourself up for success on the weekends or even at night so you know that you can automatically win at least 80% of the time. And 80% is, it's really my marker, like my barometer, because I think if you're trying to do something 100%, you're likely not going to fulfill that. But 80%, like, I think that makes us feel a little bit more comfortable. I don't know about you, but 80% number makes me feel a little bit better. Like, okay, there's fudge room there for me to royally mess up a couple of times, and I'm still going to be okay. And it's still not going to be that big of a deal. But if I'm focused on 80% of the time, I want to either, again, if we're talking about Kyle and eating out, I want to spend X amount of money per week. I want to try to go out to eat 2 times instead of 4 times. Maybe I want to not spend so much on my morning coffee habit. Whatever it is for your particular situation, it's figuring out how you can win 80% of the time. And maybe that means prepping meals at home. Maybe that means being smarter with your grocery list or thinking about meal planning. You know, all of these things that, particularly if we have like busy, crazy lives, like meal planning is the last thing we want to do. I know for me, I love cooking. I love eating food, but sometimes I'm just not in the mood to sit down and think about recipes and make a list and find out what I have in the fridge. And I just want to sit on the couch and like get sucked into something else on Netflix. I don't want to have to deal with that stuff. But I go back to thinking about, okay, how can I win 80% of the time? And if I do a little bit of legwork, then it's going to help propel me during the week pretty far ahead. So those are the things that really work for me. And, you know, finding this balance. And this goes for any money habit that you're really trying to change. Because if you just say, okay, cold turkey, I'm never eating out again, I'm not going to eat out this week, it's not going to stick. It's not going to work because you're taking away something obviously that you very much enjoy. And, you know, removing those pieces of our lives just in like one fellow swoop, it's going to backfire and you're probably going to end up going out to eat even more and spending even more money than if you just used that like 80% barometer for the week. That's at least going to get you somewhere closer to, okay, we're not eating as much, we're saving some money, we're not quite there, but we can see progress. And when that progress starts happening, that's really where I think that light bulb goes off in your head and that aha moment, like, oh, wait, we can actually do this. Like, we can actually create a habit around this and it might actually stick. So just a little food for thought. Great question, Kyle. There is, again, absolutely nothing strange about that question. And I think it's something that resonates with so many of us. And it flows right into the episode today with talking to Michelle from The Holistic Wallet. And what I love is that she's built this whole brand around mind shifts in areas of our lives, but particularly finances. And she focuses on the money psychology to really integrate these healthy and balanced financial habits into our lives. And I don't care whether you're a money expert or not, or you're living paycheck to paycheck, or you have $1 million in the bank account, we all need help about how we can cultivate these healthy and balanced habits so that we can really continue to chase after the life that we want to live with what we've got, but do it in a way that motivates us, where we feel engaged with us. Like our money isn't just dragging us along. We're in control. We're empowered to make different changes. So Michelle uses strategic planning and mindful coaching to really help, as she says, turn numbers into a work of art. That's really cool. As she designs holistic budgets and sustainable systems to help you pay off your past, save for your future, and enjoy the present. And I don't know about you, but that is a message that I can certainly get behind. That's really my whole goal in life, you know? And I think that more of us should be thinking about our money in that way and thinking about, okay, how do we live a balanced and healthy financial life? And how do we create, like she says, sustainable systems around that? So we're moving forward. It's not like we're never going to go backwards, but at least we know how to get back to the place to move forward. So before we roll up our sleeves and dive in, a quick word to thank our podcast episode sponsor. Okay, call me crazy, but I actually love to learn new things and could be constantly taking classes and subjects that I'm really interested in and passionate about. One thing I love about podcasting as well and listening to podcasts is that it's just this real learning experience to be able to open up my ideas to you and to listen to new ideas in a space that, I mean, let's be honest, a decade ago wouldn't have been available to us. So when my passion for learning something new swells, I turn to a great learning tool I found called Udemy. With over 65,000 courses, basically anything you want to learn about, Udemy is the largest space for online learning. I'm currently taking a class right now called Your Big Book Deal from a super cool teacher who's written and ghostwritten over 30 books. So let's just say she knows her stuff and I'm learning a lot. Udemy has something for everyone, seriously, whatever you want to learn about and on any device, Udemy gives you access to new knowledge wherever you're at. You need to check out Udemy. They've helped so many students all over the world improve their skills, their careers, and their lives. So the question I have for you is, what do you want to learn about? They've even helped me set up this exclusive offer for my listeners. Go to ude.com bankofamerica.my/mymoney right now and get 90% off when you sign up for classes. You will not find a better price, so sign up for classes now using my link, ude.my/mymoney, and get access to life-changing classes for 90% off. And make sure you download their app for your phone so you can stream your course wherever you're at. Again, that's ude.my/mymoney. ude.my/mymoney. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/ETM. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you, And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. "Talkin' Money" under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. So, Michelle, I was really excited to have you on the podcast. You know, I feel like after reading just even snippets of your story, it's very similar to a lot of people's. You know, you graduated college, you had debt, you didn't really know how to get out of it. You know, you had some maybe not so great money habits like we all do, but you had a moment and you really turned things around for yourself. And now you have this really cool brand. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about like what was the secret or the magic dust that really helped you begin to kind of make changes with your finances?
Well, I think I had my why solidified early on. So when I had graduated into the Great Recession, and I was really angry at the financial industry, and I felt like taken advantage of, and that everyone else was kind of taken advantage of, and we weren't really informed consumers, and the system was broken, and there was a lot of like angry baggage around that. So I like was politically motivated almost to understand this, because I just wanted to reclaim my power, not just because I didn't want to be in debt, but because I didn't want to feel taken advantage of. So I, as monotonous and boring and difficult to understand, like I kind of felt like I was reading Spanish sometimes, and I don't speak Spanish. It was like I made myself get through it because I was so committed to understanding this stuff that was supposedly so difficult. Because I also worked in the financial industry, and then I worked with people who weren't brilliant. They were quite the opposite of brilliant. And if they could do this, like, and if they could be responsible for like hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, like I could figure this out. Like I wasn't, you know, if they could do it, I could too. So
yeah, you just brought up like so many good points. I'd like to just rewind for a second, and I'd love to know a little bit more about, you know, I'm sort of on that, I guess I'm called a Xennial on that, you know, Gen X millennial border. And so although, you know, I went through the Great Recession and obviously, you know, had an impact, I wasn't graduating college right at that particular moment in time. I'd love to know just like a little bit, like, was this something that, you know, you and your friends like talked about a lot of like, wow, like we're graduating and like everything is really shitty right now. Or, you know, was this something like you were just so like fired up about, you know, that there wasn't a lot of opportunity, or maybe that things that were tough?
Yeah. Well, I think like starting college, my mentality going into it, and I guess what everyone was saying, because we were like in this bubble at that point. I started college like 2005, 2006. And we were talking like it was this idea that you just go to college, you get a good job, and then you pay for all your debt. Like, and debt's just the fact of life. It's fine. Don't worry about it, because you'll have a job and you'll pay what you can, and it's totally cool. And then, so I did that, and I'm in college, and all of a sudden, like, everything exploded. and it was like, wait a second. Like, now we have like a lot of debt, you know, like we didn't have houses, but we had student loans that were like close to
massive. Mortgage. Yeah.
and then it was like, well, we have to pay this back. And this, you can't file bankruptcy for, right? Like, I'm not that yes. anyone really was aware of that until later, after, like post-graduation. Then I was like, wait, what? Like, you can, all that stuff gets wiped out, but not your student loans. That's pretty crazy. But
it feels like a conspiracy, doesn't it? It feels like, this is interesting.
Yeah, it feels like a trap. And it just, like, all these things, it's very disillusioned. It's like that disillusionment of everything you thought you knew, like everything you took for a fact, isn't real. Like, it was actually just like a possibility. It wasn't set stone. And then you just kind of question everything after that.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great point, I think, because you're right. Like, we all grow up kind of thinking this like linear progression of things, you know, mm-hmm. we graduate high school, we go to college, we graduate college, we get a good job, you know, from there, either we get married or we buy a house or whatever. Like, we think this kind of linear way about life. And I can imagine like how kind of gypped you would feel if, you know, you're in the middle of college, you know, 19, 20 years old, whatever. And it's like, wait a minute, that whole illusion now is getting blown away, you know? And, you know, I mean, for me, it was certainly like late 20s, early 30s where life started to get really rocky for me, but I can't imagine like what that would have been like at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, and it was funny because I was fortunate enough, and by fortunate, I was actually unfortunate because most of my friends didn't have to work while they were in college. They didn't, I don't even think many of them had student loans. Their parents were a little bit well off and more prepared than my parents were. So they went to like Ivy League, like the good name schools. And I didn't. Like, I went to a state school and I paid my way, and I had to work while I was going through college. And so I had a foot in the door. So like when the recession happened, I was still kind of cheap labor. I was working in the financial industry. I was only making like around $10 an hour. So if there were layoffs, I probably wasn't going to be the one getting cut. But my friends didn't have that foot in the door. So when they graduated and like expected to get a job and just make good, like they just needed money right. to just have nice apartments in Manhattan. Like, they just, it wasn't so much that like they had bills to pay or anything like that. It's just they wanted to continue living their lives on their own yeah. and not have to, you know, move back in with mom and dad. And so I was a little bit more, the way that my life went was like, I had some money coming in, and I had a little bit more experience in what that's like to have that kind of cash flow, and learning how to budget, even though I wasn't really budgeting. I was just kind of like, well, do I have money in my checking account? Yes, no, okay, spend.
Right. But you had, that's a good point. Like, you had some experience, at least, even if it was like on a small level, with kind of operating in the real world and taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
So I love this idea of, I know your blog, your company is called Holistic Wallet. I love this concept. It's something that's like really near and dear to my heart, because I think it's a message that we don't hear enough about, that the idea of money is really about having this holistic life and not just about who can accumulate the most money. Because, you know, I've been a financial planner for over 12 years and I've seen some people who have a lot of money and they are absolutely not happy. I mean, sure, they go on trips, they buy nice cars, they may have Rolexes and whatever it is. But, you know, I think that there's not enough messaging out there, particularly with social media and you know, reality stars and everything that's happening. You know, how did you come up with the idea of holistic wallet? And like, what does that really mean to you?
Well, when I was in the financial industry, I was working with a lot of middle managers and I was rising through the ranks. And I wanted to make a lot of money. Like I was offered a full-time job. I was good at what I did and I had a lot of earning potential there. So the reason why I stuck around, because it wasn't something that I really cared to do, but I had a mentor who was basically like, take the money and do what you want outside of this place. So right. That was like the seed that was kind of planted for me where I was like, okay, what do I want to do with my life with this money? It wasn't just so much like have lots of money. And I just wasn't like, I'm not interested in like cars and clothes and like the fancy things. The thing that I spent a lot of money on was like personal care, like acupuncture and taking care of my body and like that kind of stuff. I lived in New York City, so I had like the arts and theater.
Lots of stuff.
There are things to do.
Lots of stuff to spend money on.
And so like I wanted to spend money on that stuff, but I like when I looked around at my coworkers, they had the cars and the kids and all the expenses that come with kids and all the clothes and just like the eating out all the time and getting a new TV for every bedroom and every deck and like just lots of stuff. And whether they could afford it or not, they were still super stressed and they felt super handcuffed to these jobs and they were not happy and things weren't always great. And they didn't really feel like they could leave or make any changes in their career because they were so, they needed this salary. And so that was basically like seeing how unhappy they all were was kind of like motivation for me to make sure that my money went towards things that were actually important to me and like making sure that I got clear on what the life looked like that I actually wanted to be living outside of just earning this money.
Yeah, exactly. So the money can then be a mechanism to help you live like whatever version of life you want to live without it having to be copycat of everyone else with, you know, massive amount of stuff and kind of all that, you know, all that stuff, I guess I would say. Stuff. Yeah, exactly. There's no better word than stuff. Do you feel, you're obviously, you know, a little bit younger than I am. Do you feel like that idea of, you know, not necessarily coveting, you know, a lot of stuff and maybe spending your money on, you know, healthier things, like you said, acupuncture and I don't know whether, you know, yoga classes and juices and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Do you feel like that is, you know, really something that is a differentiator between like the true younger millennial generation and any of the other generations? Or is that just an anomaly? That's just where we're at now in our life and culture.
Well, I guess based on, there are stereotypes about millennials with like the avocado toast and stuff like that.
Sure.
<know?
laughs>
But I think, you know, we look at, we want to see like how much power we can have. I think we're very caught up in being in power with our, like being our best selves and that kind of stuff, especially seeing like, you know, growing up with, we didn't really grow up, but like graduating into, social media and like seeing all these edited lives and with the internet and everything like that. There's a lot more pressure on us, I think. Like there's a lot more influence to be our quote unquote best selves. But So, like, whereas in the past, like, the pressures were elsewhere. It was like you didn't see what someone was eating. You saw like what they were driving, right? Like, so
true.
And you know what they did was, you know, taking their, like, chauffeuring their kids from soccer practice and stuff. Whereas now you see people like doing the other things outside of work, where like going to the movies or going to a concert or stuff like that. So I guess, I don't know. Like, I'm not I know there's definitely stereotypes, but I'm not sure if that's like culture, like a nature or nurture type of thing.
Yeah, no, it's just a curious question. Yeah. You know, and I think another thing that I like a lot about this whole idea around, you know, holistic and hold on a sec, I got to clear my throat. All right. So I think another thing I like about this concept around, you know, being holistic, particularly when it comes to your bank account and your money, is the piece that you talk a lot about, which is, you know, the psychology around money, which I feel like people don't, there's not enough conversation about it. Probably my podcast listeners are getting tired of me, like, feel like I'm beating a dead horse about this, but it really is, you know, so powerful to how you engage and manage your finances and just your overall kind of outlook on your finances. You know, what about that resonates with you?
I've tried to do things. So like when I made that pivotal moment in my financial life, when I got a handle on things and learned everything and got like actively and consciously involved, it wasn't like all of a sudden it just clicked. Like I knew what I was supposed to be doing with my money. I knew it was the right thing, the fiscally responsible thing. I knew I was learning all of those things, but I still couldn't get myself to do them. So because of that, I was like, we're like the life hacking generation, I guess, like where it was like, well, how do you get this to work? And that was where like the psychology came into play and just basic habit changing. So, and this, like the stuff that I do with money now, it's applicable to physical health or mental health or like a work-life balance or just changing any bad habit, that like looking at your ex's Facebook page, like that kind of stuff, changing any habit.
Which is not a good idea. I'm just going to say.
But it's not, I mean, maybe that might help, be helpful to someone to like motivate them to do something, but like we all have different
true
motivations, and we're like unique little snowflakes, right? So figuring out like how habits work, which is basically like the cue, the routine, and the reward, and like what we're craving to drive that cycle, is all that, like, if we can figure out where, like, what we're craving and what our reward is and how to get the same reward from a different routine, like feeling wealthier, right? Like if you want to feel wealthier, the way I used to feel wealthy was by buying a lot of stuff. Like I was like a shopaholic while I was in college before the recession. And I like having lots of stuff made me feel secure and wealthy and prosperous and stuff. But I was able to flip that around, and that like if I saved money, I could also feel wealthy and safe and secure and prosperous and that kind of stuff. So, but if I wasn't able to do that, if I just tried to like, instead of eating the chocolate cake, eat the apple and like get a different reward from that, like that wasn't what I was craving, right? So how do you get yourself to keep eating that apple when all you want is the chocolate cake, right?
That's a very good analogy. Yeah. I am definitely a dessertaholic, so yeah. That resonates with me. So, you know, how would somebody, I mean, what would you tell somebody if they're in that situation? Like they have this habit, they know it's not great, and they want to change it, but like nothing that they've done seems to work, like particularly when it comes to their finances. Like, how do you even begin to make those shifts?
A lot of it is just being mindful in the beginning. So being conscious of how you're feeling, like what feelings are coming up, like not judging anything, not saying like, oh, this is bad or this is good, just seeing what comes up, and not like resisting it, not fighting it. And like letting yourself be and letting yourself like make those mistakes. So like letting yourself go into a Target and buy something that, you know, isn't necessarily on your shopping list, and seeing like, why am I doing that? Or like, what am I feeling in this moment? and staying conscious of that, like when you get home and you put that thing away, and are you going to use it again? How does that make you feel when you're not using it? You know, how do you feel when you're paying a bill? And that's what I find is what motivates us to get those things to stick, is where we, when we realize this is what feels good, this is what doesn't feel good. Or even though I thought this felt good, it actually turns out it doesn't feel that good. So how to, like, and then that's where the problem solving comes into play. So it's a process. It's not like, I think, you know, we look and there's personal finance blogs and all these like life hacks and stuff, and this is how you do things, but we're all different. We all have different motivations. We have different money stories. So at the sooner we just get conscious of that, the other pieces will kind of fall into place. It does take some coaxing and it helps to like have someone to talk about that stuff with and kind of get some other, you know, feedback on, okay, this is what I want to do. How do I like maneuver this so that I'm getting the same reward with a different routine? But ultimately it just starts with being mindful of how we're feeling. And like, because a lot of the personal finance stuff teaches us logic and it teaches us like rules and strategies and stuff. And it says like, to do that, you have to ignore your emotions and just overcome your emotions. Whereas my mentality and my approach to this, which I find has been very effective for me and my clients, has been, no, embrace those emotions, like use those emotions to your benefit. So like, if you feel scared, use that to your benefit. If you feel happy, use that to your benefit, like pursue how you want to feel and changing how you want to feel rather than like trying to act like a money robot and make your financial decisions around like logic and as if you're not a human, because ultimately you are a human. So,
right. Yeah. And so do you think like, it's just, you know, is this something like somebody should journal about, or like, how would they keep track of, you know, like what are the things that make me feel good or don't make me feel good, so that they have like some way to reflect on that or have some sort of awareness of really, you know, what those things are over, you know, some given period of time?
Yeah, I recommend like tracking your spending or tracking all your expenses, even like all your bills and that stuff, and how you feel, like if you're feeling grateful for that, if you're feeling resentful of it, if you're like, oh, this was a mistake, doing that in the moment and then like coming back to that in 30 days and seeing how you feel about that again. And I've done this with expenses where, I mean, there are things that I bought at Target that I was like, this is life changing. I'm so excited to use this journal. This happened to me last week. I got a new microwavable journal that you can scan onto an app. And I'm like, oh, this is going to change my life. And now I'm like, actually, what? The pen it came with. Like, this is not, I'm not enjoying this at all. So on my spending tracker, I have two very different, state of mind, you know, coming to when I first put it on the spending tracker, I was very grateful for it. And now I'm like, I'm kind of neutral at this point. So seeing that, and then like, you know, it's like collecting data and like going back to your data and seeing like, okay, like this didn't actually pan out as much as positive as I thought it was going to. So maybe the next time when I'm in the journal aisle of Target, I'm going to like keep my cool and remember that, how many journals have I gone neutral on over the years, right? Like,
they're so addictive though, aren't they? They've got like all the clever sayings on them. Like, you just want to reach for them.
They're so pretty. It's so hard. Really so hard.
I totally. And Target is just a hard place regardless. Yeah. There's so much stuff, you know? Yeah. And you brought up a good point in that discussion that, you know, there are so many blogs. I was just looking up the other day, and I think on Google there was something like 836 million search results came up when I typed in personal finance blogs. So obviously there's not that many personal finance blogs, but you know, a lot of articles about the top 50, the top 100, you should read that one, you should read this one, you know, and there's just like so much information, which is good. It's great that there, you know, is, I mean, when I graduated college, there wasn't this type of information. So you had to either find somebody to help you or you just had to like figure it out yourself. And of course, there's still that element of it, you know, that figuring out that yourself. But, you know, I find that it's still this kind of taboo topic. Like, there's still a stigma around talking about money or hiring someone to help you with your money. Or, you know, we don't want to talk about the bad stuff. You know, we don't go to dinner with our friends and we're like, oh my God, I just bought my sixth journal that I'm not going to use and now I'm over budget or whatever it may be. Why do you think this is? Like, do you think there's ever going to be kind of a shift in this where we're more open about our money, or is this just something like human nature? This is just something where there's just so much like fear and shame and all those like negative emotions tied up.
Yeah, it's a very charged topic, and it's been passed down from generation to generation, and every generation has their own experiences with it. And I am hopeful that we talk about it more. The way that, especially with the internet and blogs and social media and that kind of stuff, I do see that people are starting to talk about it a little more, or at least there's more, it's becoming less of a taboo in certain corners of the internet, right?
Yes.
Like here, right? And people listening to this. So, and I think the more that we hear stories about people's struggles and not just like being preached to about this stuff, like I find that people are more likely to be less judgmental of themselves. And then like that takes the pressure off to kind of do better and to like just make an effort, like knowing that this is it's a process. It's a long process to like unlearn decades of information that we've been fed from like our society and our families and our schools and advertisements and everything. So it's, we definitely have our work cut out for us in like rewriting all that stuff, but that goes for anything, right? But I do think that money is becoming a little bit less of a taboo topic because we have like the CFPB and we have some more, like we have the internet that like people can look stuff up and like you can Google a definition for something, you know, without needing a book on finance to, you know, to go to the library and figuring out right. like what
that's just so much of yeah. a process.
Not worth it, right? But like you can Google like what's an amortization schedule or like all the acronyms that like go into buying a mortgage, you know, or borrowing a mortgage, you know.
Yes.
It's just so
yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Even when you understand it, you're still like, what? Yeah. So I know, I mean, you're doing a lot to, you know, help people and further this conversation. Tell me a little bit more about like Holistic Wallet and kind of the work you do with people and, you know, the passion that you have for that.
Yeah. So I love to work with people who are passionate about their impact in the world and just want to like monetize that, not necessarily through their line of work, but with the money that they earn, whether it's they're working in their passion field or they're just like me, we're working in the financial industry and try to do right by that money. I am in the transitionary stage of getting rid of the Holistic Wallet. So I'll be just solely working as Michelle Bobrow for the going forward. But it's basically all this. I like to help people come up with plans. The financial strategies are the easy part, I find. It's coming up with the psychological strategies and tactics to overwrite those bad habits so that you can put that money that you work so hard to earn towards the stuff you love and like funding that life that you actually want to be living, not just like keeping up with the Joneses.
Such a good point. Okay. So I have a couple of little sort of fast round questions. I'd love to go through just kind of get to know you a little bit better before we end the episode. So if you're game, okay. So first question, you know, a little bit light and fluffy here, but you know, are you an ice cream girl or cake girl?
Ice cream. Yes. But dairy-free ice cream.
Dairy-free. Okay. Any particular ice cream like flavor is just your favorite or any?
The So Delicious has this cashew caramel cluster that is my current favorite. It could change, but that's my favorite right now. So.
With dessert, it can change.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. What was the last podcast you listened to?
The last podcast I listened to was Planet Money about LeBron James being underpaid, which was fascinating because he was
fascinating being underpaid. Yes.
Million, yeah, he's that's underpaid. Okay.
He's now come to my city. We're not quite sure how we feel about that yet, but we will see. The jury is out. Okay, if you were granted a special power where you could fix one thing in society, what would it be?
Gender pay inequity. That's my big fix. That if I had a magic power, I would totally fix that.
Because it's still very much a problem, no matter how much we want to think it isn't. Yeah. It is still, yeah. I am still commonly referred to sometimes as a secretary or honey or this or that, and it's just I look at people with just these big shocked eyes. I cannot believe that we're still using that language and thinking about women in that way.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm and I was a women's studies major in college. I am flabbergasted that this still goes on, but and the pay inequities that when I left financial banking, I was making less than 65% of the men around me with the same title and less experience. So
there you go. Yep.
I'm a little bitter.
And you have every right to be. And I think most women are standing right next to you for sure. Last question. What is your favorite all-time splurge?
Oh, man. It's a lot of my favorites are not splurges. They're $5 purchases. My favorite splurge would probably be my business. I spent a lot of money on my business and I love it very much. So I'm going to go with that.
That's a good splurge. I love that. And that splurge helps other people. So, that's a good one. Awesome. All right. So tell listeners where they can go to connect with you, find out more information, find out how to work with you.
So you can find me at theholisticwallet.com. And if that changes by the time you listen to this episode, it will forward you elsewhere. And you can find me on Instagram at the handle Holistic Wallet.
So if you love this episode, do me a favor, share it with your friends, shout it out on social media, subscribe to the podcast in any podcast player that you listen to, and head on over to the link in the show notes to leave us a review.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.